From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
My foster home is in the projects in Astoria, Queens. This is my sixth home I've been in, hopefully my last.
One home, two homes, six in all. A young woman's search for family.
Growing up without your mother and your father, you have to ask yourself all the time, where do I belong? Who loves me? Who don't love me?
Today, a story of growing up in foster care and moving beyond it. Shirley Starr Diaz and her story, a finalist from the Third Coast International Audio Festival.
It captured the judge's attention from its very first line. She says, whenever my parents come up in a conversation, I want to lie. And so it had them, you know, right from the get-go.
Stay tuned for an insider's journey through foster care. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and this is Latino USA. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community is Marielena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Well, another heavy news week, Marielena. Welcome back.
I know. It's fun to be in the news business.
It is. Never a dull moment. All right. So the campaign is in its final weeks. And according to a new survey, Marielena, by the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, or NALEO, a large group of Latino voters in battleground states are still undecided and or open to persuasion. And this is saying that battleground states, they talk about Colorado, Florida, New Mexico, and Nevada. 90% of Latinos surveyed said they do intend to cast their ballot, but they're undecided, many of them still. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, the number of undecided is not that high. I believe that, like in Florida, there was 15% undecided. But I guess, you know, this survey is basically supporting the theory that the Latino vote can decide the election. And among other things, it's telling us that Latinos didn't just register in large numbers, but that they are motivated to vote. Many of them are participating for the first time. You know, they're psyched to vote. And the importance of reporting, you know, that part of the story is that the Latino vote is still up for grabs. And even though NALEO surveys and all the other surveys show that Barack Obama is definitely above John McCain in the polls, around half of Latinos who are eligible to vote, vote. So this time around, they really want to go out and vote. And a lot of them still don't know because they're new voters.
All right. So while all of that is happening in South Carolina, not a battleground state, more than 300 immigrants were arrested at the Columbia Farms chicken processing plant. Here's an interesting quote from an article by a witness who said, the excuse that they're taking jobs that Americans won't do, well, that just doesn't hold water anymore. With the economic crisis we've got going on, we've got to put a stop to it. This is from David Wynn, a co-owner of a nearby air conditioning wholesaler. So essentially, there's some kind of tie now that immigrants who are doing this kind of work in these chicken processing plants and the current crisis that people are feeling, the economic downturn, is somehow tied. Marielena, give us your take on what you see here.
You know, it reminds me of the last interview I did with President Bill Clinton before he left office, and I asked him if he thought that immigrants should be blamed for the ills of the country, which is something that constantly happens. And he said that in times of economic distress, the first ones to be blamed are immigrants, but that when things are going well, immigrants are welcoming into the country. So, you know, it seems like that's what's happening now. With so many jobs being lost in the last few months, I think Americans are resentful of those immigrants who have jobs, even if they're not the jobs that Americans want. So I guess we need to ask ourselves if either Americans are taking a look at maybe applying for some of these low-skilled jobs that require long hours, you know, difficult working conditions and low wages, or if it's just the idea that an undocumented immigrant has a job and that they don't, that has some people, like the one you quoted, angry.
Marielena, at the same time that all of this is happening, we have got two ads, several ads, but two in particular in Spanish from the McCain camp as well as from the Obama camp. Now, interestingly, Marielena, if you don't know anything about politics, these ads could be entirely confusing because the Obama campaign is blaming John McCain. John McCain is blaming Barack Obama, all of this for the failure of immigration legislation. And they're appealing to Latino voters who speak Spanish. And yet immigration has not been talked about in the two presidential debates. So they're not talking about the issue.
Well, they're not talking about the issue because it's a very volatile issue. It's a very, you know, delicate and divisive issue. And they're probably very, very glad that it just, you know, went into the back burner as a political issue in this presidential campaign, because this is one where you cannot be all things to all people. And, you know, even though immigration is not the major issue for Latinos, it's the one that sets them aside from the rest of the electorate. And the candidates know it. So in both campaigns, the ads on immigration are misleading. You know, the truth is that both Obama and McCain in the past have supported immigration reform. And when it comes to this particular issue, they're trying to appeal to Latinos who, yeah, they do care more about jobs and they care more about the economy and education and health. But, you know, this is a symbolic issue to them. The truth is that, like I said before, they both have supported it, but they're both ignoring it right now. They're both doing everything possible to ignore it. And they don't want to burn their bridges, and they don't want to alienate those Americans who were very much against immigration reforms.
And let's just remind our listeners that both Barack Obama and John McCain voted for that very controversial wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. So whoever gets into office, they're both going to have to answer to that one. Maria Elena, thanks for joining us again this week.
Thank you, Maria.
Maria Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish-language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. There are any number of social issues that seem to have disappeared from the political landscape since economics hit the fan. Today, we're going to take a break from electoral politics and the economy. And instead, we're offering an insider's look at foster care. Our guide is Shirley Starr Diaz, and she's about to age out of the foster care system in New York. Her story is a finalist in this weekend's Third Coast International Audio Festival, being held in Chicago. We'll talk with Shirley in a few minutes. But first, here's her story, Growing Up in the System, produced by the Radio Rookies at WNYC.
Whenever my parents come up in a conversation, I want to lie. I want to say, all of us live together in one big house. My mother sings while she's folding clothes. My father watches TV. And my brothers and sisters are always in my room, taking my things. But the truth is, when I was 13 years old, my father murdered my mother at the Jets Motor Inn on Queens Boulevard. I have 8 brothers and sisters, but the 6 youngest were adopted, and I don't know where they are. The last time I saw them was when we buried my mom. What do you remember of her?
Everything.
Jeanette is my oldest sister. We grew up in different foster homes, but we're close now.
Our mother loved the music from way back. She used to always sing, Oogie, 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 get down. Oogie, 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 get down. So I definitely remember that.
Jeanette knows how to move on. She works. She makes sure her kids look nice for school. And she keeps herself busy. But me, I'm stuck in the past where my future's flying towards me. I'm about to age out of foster care.
The first thing is, obviously, we have a liaison with housing.
Takima Osborne is my caseworker.
Set up an appointment with that.
She tells me what I need to do so I can get my own place. But to me, it sounds like blah, blah, and blah.
Are you working, Star?
No, I'm not. I don't know how to explain it, but I just can't get myself to care. I look around me, and most people are on public assistance. I don't even know where to start. My foster home is in the projects in Astoria, Queens. This is my 6th home I've been in. Hopefully, my last.
See, this is what I hate. You gotta wait for somebody to open the door, and half of the time, they don't even open it.
It's not a given to have a key when you're in a foster home. If I have to go to the bathroom, sometimes I have to go pee in the staircase.
Hey, Nana.
We call our foster mother Nana. She considers herself a very nurturing person.
Some of the kids are very stubborn and hard-headed and lazy, and they get the attitude, but you know what? They can't beat my attitude.
I've shared a bedroom with Sheena and Vicky for a year.
Get that plate off your bed before the roaches start coming.
Sheena's a drama queen, and she loves to dance.
When I get to you.
Vicky's 16, and she's pregnant.
My belly's itching.
So what you about to do?
Put cocoa butter. It stops the itch.
I've had so many foster sisters and brothers, sometimes for a year, sometimes for a week or two. You'd think I close down to people, but I don't. Like my boyfriend, Flo.
Yo, for the mic, what's your name?
Flo. F-L-O-W.
He lives right across the hall. He wants to be a rapper.
I'm like the most versatile MC you've heard in a long time.
People are always telling me, Flo don't love you. He's a player. But I don't care.
The guy you with right now, I don't really support that decision of you being with him.
Yeah. My sister Jeanette does not like him.
You know, like he has 2 kids and baby mama drama. He's still living in his mom's crib. He doesn't have a job. How does he support himself? Knowing that what we went through, you know what I'm saying, with our father. And, you know, he was an alcoholic. He had no job. It's like a flashback.
Sometimes I feel like my life is a flashback. Jeanette's always looking forward, but my head is turned around.
I'm sitting here in the crib.
Recently, I decided to write my father in prison.
I really don't know what to say. I don't know if I should write the letter starting with, "How are you? It's your daughter, Shirley, also known as Star. Do you remember me?"
To me, it meant something to belong to somebody, even if my parents weren't perfect. My mother and my father drank a lot. My father was a boxer in Puerto Rico. He turned his fist on my mother and on us.
You killed my mother, something I've never forgot, and I'm sure you either.
But sometimes I feel like if I could forgive my father, I could have him in my life some kind of way. I try to explain that to Jeanette.
I just feel like there was an accident. He probably didn't mean to kill her. Maybe he was just drunk and he blanked out and he just hit her the wrong way and he regrets it.
He don't deserve a second chance to me. There's 9 children left, abandoned. You feel like you want to forgive him. You feel like you want to give him a second chance. It's okay by me. But, like, to me, all bonds is cut. You got it?
Yeah, when you going to do my hair?
Girl, not right now, son. I'm tired. Probably tomorrow, yeah.
Growing up without your mother and your father, you have to ask yourself all the time, where do I belong? Who loves me? Who don't love me? The truth is, I will forgive anyone if it meant that they would just come through for me.
Well, right now, I'm in my comfort zone by the river. And basically, I just received a letter from my father. And it's crazy. He don't even know how to spell my name. He wrote Shirley. Yo, tu padre que quiere, que te quiere mucho, escriba pronto.
My father told me to believe in God, send him some pictures, and write to him in Spanish next time. But I wanted him to tell me why. I wanted him to say anything that would make it okay for me to love him.
Because I felt like I needed to forgive him, but for, like, now I don't even know what to do.
My foster sister Vicky had her baby. Now we share a room, the baby, her, and me.
I don't know, sometimes I think like maybe if I was to have a baby, maybe it will make me a stronger person and maybe it would like push me to do what I gotta do, give me that extra force. You know, does that give you?
Yes, actually, yeah, I do. It actually makes you think quicker and more mature. And I think if you was to have one, I think you get your GED diploma fast, your apartment fast, you get a job. She gets mad if she don't get the teta.
Breastfeeding.
Wow. I think I want one.
You'd be a nice mother.
You think so? You think the baby will love me?
Of course, you're the mother. She's gonna feel that you love and she's gonna love you back. You're gonna have each other.
That's what I need, each other.
Yeah.
I didn't know it at the time, but I was pregnant too. And here's the truth. I was trying to get pregnant. When I saw the heartbeat on the screen, I was happy. I felt like I didn't have to face the world alone anymore. I was hoping my sister Jeanette would be excited for me.
Like, you know how you want that somebody that is you, you understand? Like, you could take care of and
yeah,
you could love.
That's the same thing most people say, but that baby can't love you back when it's small. They don't know about that. You understand what I mean? He needs you to take care of him. You know, it's not a doll.
I know.
You know, and I know how you what you mean by saying that. It's like to you, you feel right now that you really don't have too many people in your family. So it's like you feel like you want to make your own family, you know, and be loved. But that's not the solution.
I believe God wouldn't just put this here just to put it there, you understand? Because I do pray a lot, and I was just looking for a way out, and, like, he blessed me. This is a blessing.
God, I believe in God, too, but you also did it to yourself.
Where do you think I'm going to end up, like, now?
Well, if you don't use your mind the way you know you should use it, you won't end up really far.
When I'm going through things, I sing to myself like my mom used to. I didn't get to have the baby. When I was 2 months pregnant, I lost it and my heart broke. But in a way, it was a relief. I was scared of raising a child. Now, I just gotta raise me.
Dear applicant, we wish to inform you that if you do not submit this information...
The housing authority is telling me if I don't have an income, they won't give me an apartment. I won't have anywhere to live when I turn 21.
Wow. I guess the only thing I didn't send them was the employment certificate. It has to be signed, and it's not signed because I don't have a job.
The time is ticking. Why can't I just get my act together? My caseworker told me a lot of foster kids end up in a shelter. And if she was trying to scare me, I'm feeling it.
Wow, I'm over here in front of a shelter.
After I left Jeanette's house one night, I walked by the Lincoln Inn, a hotel for homeless people, where I stayed with my mother once before she died.
I can't live in here. I can't go through that. I could, but I'm not.
The thing is, when I try to imagine me having a home with comfy leather sofas, a fluffy bed, and lots of food in my fridge, it's like a fantasy. It doesn't seem real. Not to me, anyway. For WNYC, I'm rookie reporter Shirley Diaz, a.k.a. Star.
Growing Up in the System was produced at WNYC Radio in New York as part of the Radio Rookies Project. The piece is an award winner this weekend at the Third Coast International Audio Festival being held in Chicago. To hear more from the festival, visit our website at latinousa.org. In a minute, we'll talk with Shirley about her life after her piece was produced and some amazing things that have happened in her life. So, no se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We wanted to talk with Shirley about her life after her piece aired, so we met up after work one day last week.
I always had a dream of being bigger than what I was, you know, like a foster care. I wanted to be bigger than just being a foster child. I wanted to be bigger than just being Shirley. I just wanted to be somebody. Growing up, people always used to tell me, you're never going to make it. None of your family, everybody in my family wanted to be singers and celebrities. And I always had that drive in me. In school, I would do talent shows. I would sing. It was something. It was my passion. It was kept me alive, you know?
You did get pregnant.
Yeah.
And then you lost the baby.
I did.
And part of your desire for wanting to get pregnant when you were 19 was because you wanted a family, but also because you thought that that would help you get more services, right?
No, not more services. No, that's not it. I just thought it'll help me, like, as far as family-wise. Services, I didn't really care about. It was just that I was hungry for family. Services wasn't everything.
What would happen if you, when you're in the system, if you get pregnant and you're in the foster care system, then what happens?
The baby, you have to take care of the baby and try his best. You know, they help you out. They do help you out. You know, they'll give you a check or whatever, and they'll give the foster mother the check, and it's up to the foster mother to buy the baby clothes and all that. But I wasn't really thinking about that. I was thinking about me and my family, like how I'm going to build it, regardless of the foster care giving me money for it or anything. I was just thinking about me and my child and the family.
So what happens? You move on. You don't end up having this baby.
Oh, I lost the baby. Yeah, I was heartbroken and I was kind of sad because, you know, that's something that I always dreamed of having since a little kid, like a family and stuff. But then I move on, and then I end up getting pregnant again.
You're pregnant now?
Yeah.
And how far along are you?
I'm 5 months, and I'm having a girl.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So now what? You've got a job. In fact, as a result of doing your story on Radio Rookies, a law office heard you and decided that you had potential. You've been working now.
Yeah, I've been working for at least 6-7 months.
And do you have a husband, a partner, a father of the baby, or is it just you and your baby?
Right now, the baby father, I talk to him, but he's more into his own thing. You understand? He has his own issues, so it's just me and my baby.
What do you think about that? How do you feel like right now when you're sitting here 5 months pregnant, glowing, New York City, young woman, but you're going to be having a baby alone?
I feel strong and I feel very confident because I know that right now I'm in a good path. And I thank God that everybody that was out there to support me, I feel like if I didn't have the support system I have now, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at right now. And I feel so blessed. I feel like without me trying to change my life, I feel like I would have never been here. And I'm glad that sometimes it's hard because I think about it when I'm riding. It's been a long day of work or whatever. And I'm riding on the train and I think about it and I see these parents that, you know, have their husbands beside them. It gets hard because I dreamed of a family. You understand? Not just me, but I'm happy because I get to raise my child and show them. I get to show her what it is. You understand? I get to show her the rights and the wrongs, and I get to be to her what my mother wasn't to me.
And what do you think is the most important lesson a mom, a single mom, can teach her daughter? What is that lesson that you feel like you weren't able to get from your mom because she just wasn't available for you?
Don't let anybody take advantage of you. And always stand your ground and be strong.
That's not like raising a little girl to be dainty and feminine. That's raising a girl who says, step away from me.
Yeah. Because there was a point in my life where since nobody taught me this person is not supposed to do this to you or this person is not supposed to talk to you this way, I've been abused, physically abused, mentally abused, verbally abused, and it took a lot from me and it took a lot from the person that I am. And I feel like it's going to be a challenge because now I think about it, You know, I got to worry about my maternity leave and who's going to care for my baby once I go back to work. And, you know, the people that's going to surround my baby, I got to make sure that those people are strong enough people and going to teach my baby the proper morals.
Shirley Starr Diaz, her radio piece, Growing Up in the System, is one of the finalists in the Third Coast competition this weekend in Chicago. Johanna Zorn organizes the festival. So let's talk about Star or Shirley's piece. What was it about that piece that captured the judges' attention and that made it stand out?
Well, first of all, I think it captured the judges' attention from its absolute very first line. She says, "Whenever my parents come up in a conversation, I want to lie." And so it had them, you know, right from the get-go, because we want to know why. We immediately want to get engaged in her life. And she takes us through this story as she's of self-discovery, of coming of age. And it's gripping, it's honest, it's authentic, it's sad, and yet there are humorous times too. And we come to feel for her, we come to get to know her, and not pity her, but really care about her story.
Because there are two things that are happening. One, it's very first person. She's talking right to you, so it kind of gets you in the gut. And also because she's an unlikely character to be telling her own story. She's a child who's been in foster – well, a teenager who's been in foster care a greater part of her life.
There are some very universal qualities to it. Trying to figure out, you know, why her sister is able to move beyond the fact that her father shot their mother, and to move on with her life and start a strong life. And yet she is stuck in the past. I think a lot of people grapple with that. And there's another time when she asks, you know, where do I belong? Again, it's a very universal question. Where do I belong? And she asks, who loves me and who doesn't love me? And I think it's a question that we all ask. So it's both the individuality of the story, the specialness of the story, Star story, and also the fact that we can also, you know, as listeners, relate to it.
Johanna Zorn is the executive director of the Third Coast International Audio Festival. Don't forget, we're collecting stories about what you and your family brought with you when you came to this country. So send us your story of what you carried with you. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. That's lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. So what are you going to sing for us?
I'll sing my song.
Go ahead.
All right, it goes. I keep moving through the same direction, doing the same damn things, and my past is right in front of me, taken away from me, right in front of me, taken away from me.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. By Kauffman, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, committed to expanding human welfare through economic growth. On the web at kauffman.org. And by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.